Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
About the people that are actually fighting for the opposition here, any worries about them?
Fighting for the opposition, they're my heroes.
We can't ask everybody to sacrifice and then tell the wealthiest among us, well, you can just relax and go count your money and don't worry about it. We're not going to ask anything of you.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
It is the Savage Nation. We listen to two pretenders. I don't know how great they are. John McCain is clearly senile when he says that the anti-Gaddafi forces, amongst whom are many al-Qaeda members, are his heroes. But he sounded bewildered and befuddled. He sounded like a fool, the same fool that ran against Obama as a front man for the forces that are destroying America. And then it was Obama again engaging in what he knows best, which is, of course, the same thing, which is class warfare. The day before he meets one of the richest young schmucks on earth who owns Facebook, hangs out with the Google boys, and then he says, let's attack the rich. Who does he think he's fooling? The answer is nobody. His ratings are in the garbage. You know, if you eat asparagus, I know I'm going to launch into asparagus now, many of us, within 15 to 20 minutes, have a very peculiar odor in our urine. And only 50% of us can actually detect that odor. I don't know if you know that. That very same odor that is found in asparagus, urine from people who eat asparagus, as a matter of fact, the cause of it is a breakdown product of methyl mercaptan and other sulfur compounds. But this methyl mercaptan is also found in skunk secretions. The point is that only 50% of us can actually detect the smell, that foul smell in the urine after eating asparagus. And I think it's the same with Obama and even McCain. I think less than 50% of us can actually detect the foul smell coming from their commentary. The anti-Americanism of Obama is apparent to 40-50% of us, but 50% of us can't smell the stink coming from the phrases coming out of Obama's mouth, just as 50-60% of Republicans can't detect the senility in John McCain. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Earth Day. Now, to most Americans, today is Good Friday. To the communists amongst us, it is Earth Day. Earth Day was founded by a murderer and a charlatan. His name was Ira Einhorn. This is a man who was a self-proclaimed environmentalist. And he made a big name for himself, Einhorn did, during the 60s and 70s. He wore a tie-dye, and he was a big loudmouth. He had a long beard, a big smile. He called himself Unicorn because his German-Jewish last name translates to one horn. And, of course, he advocated peace and flower power and free love at the University of Pennsylvania. He claims he helped found Earth Day. But the fact of the matter is there are others who have wrapped themselves in this poisonous doctrine. You must understand that he killed a young girl, a beautiful young lady. Her name was Holly Maddox. And it took many, many, many decades for that family to see justice done. This young blonde had been in a five-year abusive affair with Einhorn. And when she returned to Philadelphia to go tell Einhorn that the affair was over, he killed her and he stuffed her in a trunk. He then fled to Sweden with a little help from a Swedish leftist. It took years for the district attorney of Philadelphia to get him back to trial. There's a side note to this story, and that is Arlen Specter. You may not know it, but Arlen Specter was a Democrat at the time, a young district attorney who helped Ira Einhorn escape. Does that explain Arlen Specter, who has since been forgotten by the American people? It's open mic to Mike Friday. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you get a comment on Earth Day, on Easter Sunday, or the stink in urine after you eat asparagus, or the stink coming out of Obama's mind, or the stench coming out of McCain's. I mean, look, it's getting sicker by the day. I have to use volatile phrases to get you to respond. Most of you are brain dead now. I don't think you know what's going on around you. How could America, admittedly the most powerful military on earth, be losing the war in Libya? How is it possible? The answer is because the commander-in-chief is Barack Hussein Obama, and the war is being run by three women, Hillary Clinton, warmonger, and two of her women friends in the administration. We're losing the war in Libya. Do you remember when Defense Secretary Gates announced that he didn't want the war? Well, now he announced that we're going to be sending Predator drones into Libya, which is actually increasing the war, increasing our presence there. This is classic mission creep, or is it an example of the creep in the White House sending our forces on another losing mission? Why are we losing in Libya? Why would McCain call them his heroes? Henry Kissinger, one of the most evil men in history, in my opinion, has called for a ground invasion of Libya. I believe Henry Kissinger should be forced to lead the ground invasion along with George Soros. Will Libya become Obama's Vietnam? Very important stories. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Guys, play the John McCain piece again. They probably didn't hear it.
Are you concerned about the people that are actually fighting for the opposition here? Any worries about them?
Fighting for the opposition? Mm-hmm. They're my heroes.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. He is bewildered. He is clearly a clear and present danger to the United States military. He's always been a whack job. And, of course, he was almost president once. Well, never really. He was a fall guy. Well, there we are. Let's go to the next John McCain clips, 4 and 5.
Thank you, John McCain. Thank you. Thank you very much. Ambassador.
See, he's getting the Akbars. Some get the Academy Award, and John McCain gets the Akbar Award. Those were the would-be rebels, the rebels without a cause, I suppose. I don't see any young men in tight dungarees, by the way, in their mixture, the kind that Anderson Cooper seems to go for. They seem like fat old men from Libya who are fighting a civil war. And frankly, I mean, you know, it's the old story of the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. We know who Gaddafi is. He's a certifiably evil man. But I think that these guys could wind up being worse. Take a look at what's going on in Egypt. That's all. But, you know, it's hard for you to think, so I wouldn't demand too much from you on a Friday. Dimitri in Chicago, you're the first up on this Friday. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I agree with Obama. And the reason, as far when he talks about rich people, and the reason is rich do not invest back their profits in the United States. They invest in China.
Whoa. What do you mean by rich? Define rich.
People who own manufacturing and other businesses.
Well, what's the dollar amount for a rich person in your mind?
I would say something with over $500,000 in yearly income.
And so even if the person makes the $500,000, let us say, as a surgeon, they should invest the money in America? How? What, should they build a hospital?
Not necessarily, but for example...
Well, you just said that the rich are not reinvesting their money in America. Which rich are you talking about? General Electric? I would agree with you. Why is it that Obama's friend, Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, is able to not pay any taxes for GE in America? Do you have an answer to that?
Because he's friends with the president.
Well, wait a minute. You just said that the rich are the enemy. And yet here is your friend Obama, friendly with the enemy himself. Doesn't that make Obama the enemy?
Obama is not my friend. I said I agree with him on this point. We need to tax people who don't invest in America.
Well, okay, what do you mean? They are being taxed. They're already paying income tax at a rate of 35% of their income. So what do you want to tax them, 90%?
I would say that if you open a company which does not employ 75% of their employees in the United States, you need to be taxed at 50 to 60% off. And all your goods that you bring into America to sell that were made out with outside labor should be taxed at 50% of their value.
Well, I hear your righteous indignation. Do you have the same righteous indignation with regard to Chinese goods that are flooding into America without tariffs? Shouldn't they be taxed?
Yes, they should. Yes, they should. Everything that is not made in the United States needs to be taxed at the rate of 50%.
Well, I wouldn't say 50%, but I would say 20%, as I call for, in trickle-up poverty. The fact of the matter is, if you are in a manufacturing business and you try to export out of the United States, every other country on earth taxes those goods on arrival, which is, we are the only schmuck nation on earth that does not tax foreign goods. Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, good. So we actually agree with each other on many things.
Yes, sir. I listen to your show faithfully every day.
All right, so we're not actually disagreeing. That's good. Actually, I said 18 times, actually. Let me show you what communism is. I'm going to show you communism in a simple way. Many of you don't know what communism is. You think it has to be with a red beret. There's a local, a small supermarket near me that on Fridays past used to make fish sandwiches, fried fish that I liked a lot. It was really good fish. I called the market, and I said, "Do you have the fried fish sandwiches anymore?" He said, "No, we don't." I said, "What happened?" He said, "The county health commissioner told us that the heat lamp we were using was too small." I started to scream into the phone. "Those communist bastards," I said. "They have a man making $100,000 a year with benefits who has nothing better to do than to go to a supermarket and measure the size of a lamp when nobody ever complained about getting sick from a fish sandwich, while they let illegal aliens sell out of trucks, out of roach coaches, and they do nothing to them." And the man said, "You're 100% right. What could we do about it?" That's communism. Do you understand what communism is, fascism is? There's communism in your face. And it's here in the United States of America. It's not coming. It's here. This morning, I'll give you another example of what happened to England. England was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. You know what England is today? It's not the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's the land of the frightened and the home of the destitute totalitarians. Do you know what they did to a man in England? He sends me an email. He's a friend of mine from San Francisco who's allowed to enter England, and he went over there. And there's a story about a man who was taken out of his home in front of his kids and arrested because allegedly he wrote an email that contained a slur on gypsies when he didn't even write the email. They arrested him in England for an email he didn't even write. They took him to the police station, arrested him in front of his children for an email he didn't even write because the lousy bums in the Human Rights Commission in his town perceived his email to, in some ways, insult gypsies. Do you understand that that is communism? Do you understand that England has now become the ex-Soviet Union, that they're moving towards re-education camps, and then they're moving towards even worse than that? You say, well, why should you care? Why should you care? Because Obama is part of that internationalist movement. Don't you understand that? The article is found, the third story up on michaelsavage.com from the London Daily Mail. Man arrested in front of family for anti-gypsy email he didn't write. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We can't ask everybody to sacrifice and then tell the wealthiest among us, well, you can just relax and go count your money and don't worry about it. We're not going to ask anything of you.
I'm all over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on.
Yes, the stench coming out of his mouth is getting sickening. It's like a halitosis. Everything this man says is mental halitosis. Here is a man who cavorts with some of the richest people on earth, some of whom pay no income taxes, corporate or otherwise. And yet he has the nerve to continue to use class warfare in all of his speeches. It's sickening. You've got to understand that Obama is a classic Marxist. He's attacking the middle class, not the upper class. He is out to destroy the middle class, not the upper class. He speaks for the upper class, not the middle class. He's targeted the middle class, and he is after you. That's what the Tea Party is all about. Now I'll take your calls. Indianapolis, Dave, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, God bless you, but you just let Igor the Schmuck in Chicago talk you into making me pay $600 for a pair of boots instead of $60. I love you, but but I can't help.
Whoa. I didn't let him talk me into anything. My book, Trickle Up Poverty, calls for tariffs on goods from China.
Okay, but he wanted to tax the hell out of manufacturers here in the country and outside the country. Okay, and Michael.
Well, I didn't agree with him on that. I was trying to move him off that point to something else. I didn't agree with him.
Well, Mike, if you want to influence people, urge them not to buy things made in China. But some of these things, if you make them here in the country, they're going to cost 10 times what we could otherwise pay for them. I mean, I love your show, man, and I love you. But sometimes you go off the deep end on this, on where stuff should be manufactured.
Well, let's talk about that. I actually disagree with you. I think that we should encourage manufacturing in America. And I, for one, would be willing to pay more for the goods rather than subsidize the Chinese military buildup.
Okay, Mike, I would, too, if, let's say, they were only maybe 1.5 times as expensive as if they were made overseas. Okay, what you do as a politician...
Well, but listen to what I'm saying to you. If we put a tariff on foreign goods, that would tend to make domestic manufactured goods compete with them on par, wouldn't it?
Well, it would if you didn't have things like capital gains and income tax and all the other embedded taxes that are already in a product. The thing that the politicians need to do, whether they're on the right, and they'll never do it if they're on the left, you create the atmosphere in the country for manufacturing to occur. That means basically you get out of the way. Now, I would be happy to pay $100 for a pair of boots. That would give somebody working in that factory a decent wage. I can't pay $500 if they're made.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is if we tariff Chinese goods for boots, let's say, and let's say the boots are leather and made from a slaughtered cow hide, a slaughtered cow in its hide, right? But because there's no tariff on that good, because the wage in China is arbitrarily low because they pay them starvation wages, they can flood our shores with goods. In addition to that, they're manipulating their currency and keeping its valuation at a level which is not at par with reality. If they were forced to revalue their currency and to pay a tariff on their goods, anything they wanted to sell in America, it would make the manufacturing of American goods appeal again to manufacturers. And I think factories would reopen throughout America, whether it be steel or a steel-toed boot.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and what you see is worldwide socialism or communism appearing throughout the Western nations. England is leading the way, of course, with their draconian hate speech laws, as I point out with articles on my site almost every day. I was one of the first American victims, and many of you understood the danger and that although they came for Michael Savage, you would be next. Now a man was arrested in front of his family because a group of so-called human rights fascists in England believed that the email was offensive because the word likey was in it, and it rhymes with the derogatory term pikey, which refers to gypsies. Okay? That's what's coming to you. A town near you, unless you stand up and be counted. Here's an article from the San Francisco area up in, not in Napa, it's up in the Vallejo area. There's a little cemetery in the Vallejo area where sailors going back to the 1860s are buried. And the city now wants the new headstones that the Russian government put in for Russian sailors who died in 1863. Six of them were buried there. They died while helping to fight a fire here in the United States of America. Russia, the ship was visiting in 1863. Abraham Lincoln asked the Russian Navy to help fight the fire. These six Russian sailors helped and they died. So they were buried here. Well, their old headstones were made of wood and they disintegrated. So Russia paid to have new headstones built for them. And what happened is an atheist said, they want the crosses removed from the headstones. They didn't say crosses. They said they violated zoning laws by putting up headstones without permits. What they mean is the headstones, since Russia's Christians are Orthodox Christians, the headstones are in the shape of a cross. So the communists in Vallejo are fighting the Russian consulate over the headstones, saying, oh, no, you can't put crosses up here in our atheistic San Francisco area. The Russian consulate spent $20,000 to buy the sailors' new granite headstones to replace the weathered, toppled slabs that had marked the graves at Mare Island and Vallejo for more than 100 years. However, one of the so-called officials is ordering the Russian government to remove the gravestones because the city's Communist Preservation Commission said, well, they put in the stones without the authority to do so, and they didn't follow the rules. End of story, said Vallejo's so-called planner, Bill Tuika, T-U-I-K-K-A, we're trying to work with them, but the proper process was not followed. Sieg Heil, Bill. But some want to go further. Some cemetery advocates say the city shouldn't stop there. The DA said criminal charges should be filed against the Russian consulate for graveyard vandalism. That's according to the next communist, Myrna Hayes, director of the nonprofit Mare Island Heritage Trust. Hayes said, this is a dreadful debacle. I have nothing against the Russians personally, but this is a terrible embarrassment for them. Oh, really, Myrna? This is a terrible embarrassment for you. This is a terrible embarrassment for you and showing you for what you are. Russian consulate officials are heartbroken. They're saying, wait a minute. We just wanted to honor their sailors and give a gift to the city of Vallejo, said the Reverend Silas Ruarka, Russian Orthodox priest. Why penalize the Russians for this? It doesn't seem right. And, of course, it isn't right. So, again, read the story. It's something that's worth looking at. Why? Does it matter to you? Not directly. It matters to you indirectly because eventually it will touch you. The fact of the matter is, when they came for the Russian Orthodox grave sites, you didn't raise your voice because you're not Russian Orthodox. But when they next came for your religious headstones, there was no one left to object. Watch out, the atheists are active, they're vicious, and they're murderers, every last one of them. Okay, Wisconsin Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's great to talk to you. I've listened to you for a number of years. I'm at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina now, recovering some injuries, but wanted to let you know what's going on there in Afghanistan and that our people are
wait, are we talking about Afghanistan or Libya?
I want to stay in Libya. Well, the troops that we've got under our command in Afghanistan are exhausted. And the rules of engagement we're under, if we were to introduce them into Libya, we're going to get them slaughtered.
I couldn't agree with you more. I know about them. I published them in Trickle Up Poverty. People were shocked by them, Jim. I know exactly what they are. In other words, if enemy's troops fire at our troops and then throw their rifle down, our troops are not allowed to fire back. That's one of the rules that Obama put in. And there are others that are even worse.
Well, absolutely. And you had mentioned once that our weapons, we were only allowed 3 rounds. That's not actually correct. I wanted to clarify that for your audience. Our new M16 rifles, the M4, no longer has select fire. That is, it can't fire full automatic. It fires 3-round bursts. You have to let go of the trigger and fire another 3-round burst.
Right.
It makes the weapon even less effective than it already is.
Yes, but doesn't it make the girls who are running the war feel better? Doesn't it make the girly boys running the military feel more politically astute? When the girly boys in the Defense Department go to their UN meetings, they can say that they're using green weapons that way.
Well, absolutely, Dr. Savage. And the other thing is, most of the time, our weapons aren't even loaded. We can't engage the enemy until I actually get from upper command.
Well, that's right. The only good American soldier is a dead American soldier, according to Obama, because then they're a hero that he can use for public services and fundraising.
Well, absolutely, Doctor, and there's a lot of good Americans coming home on their shields, Doctor, and it's
well, that's the kind of soldier that the American left wants, those who come home in body bags.
Yeah, stamped members.
No, look, I'm sarcastic because I have no other words for it, Jim. This is not pleasant or easy for me to talk about. The fact of the matter is, once they hobbled the military, they took control of everything else in this country.
Well, absolutely, Doctor, and I want you to know that people appreciate what you do for us. You put the truth out there, and you do support us. And believe me, there's not much that does support us anymore. We're fighting not for the country. We're not fighting for Afghanistan or Libya. We're fighting to get home. Each guy's fighting for his buddy, and that's what it's all about. And we need to get that.
Well, I agree with you because nobody knows what the mission is in Afghanistan.
Absolutely. We just want to get home in one piece.
Why are we there? Why are we in Afghanistan? Obama's some anti-war communist, and yet he escalated the war in Afghanistan. And with the vermin in the media, you wouldn't even know we're still at war in Afghanistan. Why are we there? Does anyone in the you're in the Marine Corps, I assume?
Yes, sir.
And did anyone tell you what you're fighting for?
we're fighting to instill a democratic government in that state. But I tell you this, when we pull out, and we're going to pull out, you're going to see a bloodbath there. Those women there that we're going to leave behind, it's going to be a bloodbath. There's no one to protect them. These Taliban have no mercy. They have no mercy.
Unbelievable. Well, Jim, I for one appreciate the sacrifice that you have made for this country. Please let me send you a token of my appreciation, a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Maybe it'll help you understand you're not alone. Hundreds of thousands of people have read that book, particularly the absurd rules of engagement that our men are fighting with. It's a nightmare, a total nightmare. Texas, Tom, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
We are reaping the on two fronts the seeds that Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon sowed a number of years.
Amen. When you know, I was a young man when Nixon opened up the China to the United States. I remember when Nixon, when I was a kind of young guy, didn't really understand it, but I remember writing in my journal. I said, "Wait a minute! Everything I was told would happen when communists take power is happening under Nixon." I had often suspected Nixon and Kissinger, even though I wasn't sophisticated enough to understand what they were doing. I intuitively understood it.
Well, China certainly on the economic front, but also Nixon and Kissinger started the EPA. We haven't built a new refinery in this country in 30 to 35
years. And Nixon give us the Americans with Disabilities Act?
He did.
Yes, he did. Nixon was one of the worst presidents in American history because he was a liberal Republican. A liberal Republican. Emphasis on the L.
A wolf in sheep's clothing.
Well, I would just say a snake in plain English. Another double-talking politician. But was stuck with every law that he put in place along with all of the others, you know. No, Kissinger is a very, very, very strange Machiavellian individual. How he could be saying that we should have troops on the ground in Libya and getting away with it is incomprehensible. How could the American left, which is so vehemently anti-war, be supporting a ground invasion of Libya? It's beyond my imagination that they get away with even saying it to each other.
Kissinger's Dr. Strangelove.
Well, there are many people who think Kissinger and Soros should be tried for crimes against humanity. Thanks for the call. It never happened. They control the governments. Don't you understand they bought the governments? You don't understand that yet. One day you will. It'll be too late. One day you will. It'll be too late. James in New York on WOR. You're next up on Rock and Roll Friday.
Yes, why is the Congress letting them get away with this? I would like to know. And they had a chance in Arizona to get rid of McCain, and they still voted him in.
Because, frankly, you can pretty much buy elections in America. And McCain had much more money. His organization was the Republican Party. The Republican Party did not want the outsider to win. They wanted the old boy McCain because he had a pair of blue suede shoes that they gave him. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, and Dr.
Now, your first question was, where's Congress regarding Libya? Yeah. You're begging the question. Congress is not Congress as you suspect. Congress is a group of lobbyists who do not work for the American people. They work for those who buy them. Don't you understand that yet? Let's play Sea of Love by Phil Phillips and the Twilights, and we'll make it into a Rock and Roll Friday. Many of you want to relax a little bit in the middle of the news, and I don't blame you because there's only so much bad news you could take. And unfortunately, under this leader that we have, if you want to call him a leader, he's not my leader, he's not my president. I didn't vote for him. No, Obama is not my president. How's that? Does that work for you? How's that for a bumper sticker? Obama is not my president. Play the music.
Do you remember when we met? That's the day I knew you were my pet. I want to tell you how much I love you.
How could this con man be getting away with this every day? How? Hope and change. The man is destroying America almost in this department by department. Listen again to the first clip, and you'll hear him again, using the only tool he knows how to use, a man who got where he is through affirmative action and billions of dollars behind him. Listen to clip one.
We can't ask everybody to sacrifice and then tell the wealthiest among us, well, you can just relax and go count your money and don't worry about it. We're not going to ask anything of you.
Why don't you tell that to Jeff Immelt? Why don't you tell it to your friends at Google, whose 767 is housed at the NASA Ames Center? Why don't you tell them that they ought to be paying tax for parking their 767 at the Ames Center, that they get away with free parking? How is that possible? Answer, Nancy Pelosi. You see, everything is politics in the new Russian America. This is the USS of America, the United Soviet States of America, the USS of A. USS of A, the United Soviet States of America. Everything that the Soviet Union had tried to get rid of in order to become a free market, somewhat liberated nation, the United States is now adopting as fast as possible because of the fascisti in the United States government. The fascisti like the president and his entire Democrat Party. Okay? Now, I think that we've had enough politics, so I'll give you one more story to really make your weekend. Here's my headline. Anti-American Soros out to destroy dollar. It's hard to believe the magnitude of this story, and it may be difficult for me to do it for you because maybe you don't want to hear any more about it. So I'm going to ask you to do this. Go to the article on Michael Savage and read it over the weekend. I'm going to read you one line from it. It's been 2 weeks since George Soros bought himself, B-O-U-G-H-T, a major economic conference designed to remake the entire global economy. Listen. This is one evil man who is trying to remake the entire global economy. One man. You'd think that the government would stand up to this devil, but they're not. He owns the government. Don't you understand? He put Obama in power. So he creates a major economic conference during which he starts bad-mouthing the U.S. dollar. He puts down the U.S. dollar and it starts to get picked up. It goes viral. And now the American people are reaping what Soros is doing to us. You got to read the article. It's amazing to read the article. Let me go on. In the Machiavellian mind of Soros, the dollar needed to take a backseat and end its stint as the world reserve currency. Soros wrote in 2009, "The dollar no longer enjoys the trust and confidence that it once did, yet no other currency can take its place." And then he goes on, and he wants a basket of currencies, and he wants the dollar to be diminished. Why does this lousy rat who allegedly fled Nazism, why does this lousy immigrant rat who allegedly fled Nazism hate this country so much is the only question I have. Why would a lousy immigrant rat like Soros, who allegedly fled, and I use the word allegedly fled, Nazism, come here, make his billions of dollars under the protection of the American legal system, and now use his billions of dollars to destroy the system? Does anyone have the answer? Give me a call. I'll be back.
Savage.
Like a garbage heap. Don't wreck it. Protect it. Keep it part of it wild. Think about the future of your great-grandchild. Recycle. Bicycle. Drive by yourself. Buy those plastic products on the supermarket shelf. Boycott. Petition. Let the big business know. If we mess it up here, there's nowhere else we can go. Don't shrug your shoulders. Say, what can I do? One person can do that. Person is you. Those are the little communists, the children singing the praises of environmental activism for so-called Earth Day at Riverwood Elementary School in Cordova, Tennessee. Joseph Stalin would be very proud of them, the young pioneers of world socialism being brainwashed into all of the anti-corporate Gaiaism that we are all suffering under here in the United States of America. Okay, let's go to Mike in Indiana. Go ahead, Mike. You took me up on why is Soros trying to destroy the nation that saved him after World War II?
Yeah, Mike, he likes it. Destroying countries, and he sits back.
Well, why does our Congress not stand up to him and indict him for manipulating our currency? There's got to be a law that can be used against him.
Yes, I agree, but I think Congress is irrelevant under this president. It doesn't matter.
I do, too. I believe that Soros has more power than a nation state. I believe Soros has more power than any nation state on earth. And again, I will refer to a statement that's original to Michael Savage. No one thought of it but me. He is the Rothschild of our time. And Rothschild said, let me control the currency of a nation, and I will control the nation. This is one of the most diabolical geniuses of all time. And he is an evil man for wanting to attack my country, in my opinion. And I don't know how else to say it. If we had a legitimate Congress, this man would have been stopped. He would have been stopped. He would have been tried. He would have been deported for what he's doing. Instead, he's held up as a... do you know that a day before Obama gave the Hate the Rich speech last week, that Soros was on the wholly owned subsidiary of the White House, MSNBC, calling for taxes on the rich? Do you know that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, I'm only one man, and I'm not... in league, the same league as Soros in terms of dollars. But the man is, I believe, the most dangerous man on the planet. I believe he's the most evil man on the planet. And I believe that the man needs to be stopped by the U.S. Congress. And I believe that the Tea Party ought to get its act together and stop running in circle like chickens without heads. You've got to go to the head of the snake. The head of the snake is George Soros. Through his billions of dollars, he funds dozens of groups that are attacking America at the joints, taking this country apart, joint by joint. And unless you go to the head of the snake and attack Soros, you're not going to uncover the depth of this octopus that he has unleashed on the United States of America. If you are listening to this show and you are a leader of the Tea Party movement anywhere in this country, my advice to you would be to insist that George Soros be investigated by the United States Congress in terms of manipulating our currency and attacking the U.S. dollar. Just that alone could save this country.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the USS of A, the United Soviet States of America, where the ex-KGB agents have totally destroyed the culture of the United States of America, where they now have young pioneers of world socialism singing about Earth Day and attacking corporatism, and they now have a stooge in the White House basically speaking their words. That's right. The KGB is behind all of us. In my opinion, many people have said this. They were laughed out of the theater. But there's good evidence to see this as the fact. If you look at what's going on in Libya, for example, you see a bunch of incompetent idiots who are using the most powerful military on earth to crush basically a 10th-rate military and can't do it. How is this possible? They're incompetent and they're subversive, in my opinion. They're doing exactly what they attacked the Bush administration for doing in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. But worse than that, these college people in the Obama administration have no idea who they are dealing with in Libya. They didn't have an entry plan. They didn't have an exit plan. They have no strategy whatsoever. And just as in Egypt, as I warned, the Muslim Brotherhood is sitting back and waiting. They will wait for the opportunity, whether it be months or more than months. And then they will come in after the elections and they will take over the country. The fact of the matter is, the Muslim Brotherhood is using United States aid to force itself upon these countries the same way the Bolsheviks did in the Russian Revolution. And the Obama administration either knows it or is falling into that trap. But the Obama administration is not alone in this. McCain, being the whatever he is, senile, a fellow traveler, a Manchurian candidate, was asked by Al Jazeera a question that should have been asked by the American media. In clip six, you got to listen to this.
Are you concerned about the people that are actually fighting for the opposition here? Any worries about them?
Fighting for the opposition? They're my heroes.
He doesn't even understand what he's talking about. Bewildered, befuddled, a foolish old man? Or, in fact, is he a Manchurian candidate all along? 1-800-449-8255. Now, I don't want to bring up another question because I can't use the word, I can't say the word. It begins with a B and ends with an H. I talked about it yesterday. If I say the word, I get thousands of calls immediately on the issue of Obama's and where he was. So I can only use words around it, such as delivery or such. So again, I say, please do not call me on issues about Obama's, because if we use the anything to do with that, we get flooded immediately. So as I say, we do not know exactly where the president was, but we do know that the newspaper published an article claiming that he was in Hawaii. 1-800-4- Okay, it's the second hour of a Friday show. What a long week this has been. Friday, I flew back from the east to the west. I'm still, I don't get over jet lag that easily. To me, it affects. It affects. I started the show in the last hour talking about why asparagus makes your urine smell. And I explained that it's a breakdown product of the methyl mercaptan into sulfur products such as dimethyl sulfoxide and dimethyl sulfone. And the stink, in other words, after you eat asparagus. But only 50% or so of people are able to smell this skunk-like odor in their urine. The other 50% don't smell it at all. And I made a crude analogy, although an apt one, that what comes out of Obama's mouth is the equivalent of dimethyl sulfoxide, but only 50% or so of the American people can smell the stench coming from Obama's a class warfare wordology. Do you understand that? Do I have to make it any clearer for you? The other 50% don't even know what he's talking about. All they know is that he's good. They like him. He's good. They voted for him. They don't want to admit that they were wrong and that he's a fraud. So they don't really understand the bigger picture. Okay, let's go to the calls. 1-800-449-8255. I asked the question in the last hour of why would George Soros, who allegedly fled Nazi Hungary, I think, either it was Hungary or Romania, I don't know which, where he allegedly fled Nazi persecution, came here as a young boy, and through his cunning and his genius, made a fortune in betting against currencies as a currency speculator. He was found guilty in France in 1992 of manipulating the stock market, I believe. He appealed it and he lost. But here in America, he has not only never been tried for any such crime, he has in fact been behind the election of a president, in my estimation, and he has created several, if not many, front groups that have attacked conservatives such as myself with the most despicable kinds of Soviet-like tactics, such as taking our words and twisting them and publishing them and sending them to foreign countries to make certain that we cannot enter those countries. So it's very personal to me when I say to you that although I am only a talk show host and of no meaning to you whatsoever, if they can get away with this with me, think of what they're going to do to you tomorrow. I want you to understand the chilling statement I just made. Think of what they're going to do to you tomorrow. If they can take down one of us after another using John Podesta, that little pimp, with his front groups to smear people, as he has been doing for years, if they can use a pimp like John Podesta to do their dirty, filthy Soviet bidding as they have been doing, take a guess what they're going to do to you after all of us are gone from the media. And they have nothing but the lowlifes in CNN and the other media outlets to continue to put out the propaganda that they're really all good people out for a progressive view of the world. Wow, that was a lot of words I just used. So then I ask a question. Why would a man like Soros, who allegedly fled Nazi persecution, come to this country, make his fortune, and then use his fortune to destroy this country? Can anyone explain that to me? Arkansas, Robbie, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. George Soros does not hate America. His hatred is for humanity. Soros could care less about the country a man resides in. His hatred is for the man who resides. And you ask, how can he get away with it? Well, simple, Michael. In America, there is a meekness of the mob and a madness of the law. And that's the way he gets away with it.
Well, he owns the politicians. They're afraid of him because he buys them off.
Exactly. And the mob.
So who represents the American people? Tell me who represents the American people. If we had a representative democracy, he would be investigated, in my opinion, for currency manipulation at the very least.
Michael, no one represents the American people. We become servile and we are slaves. We just don't realize it yet. And
oh, God, is that chillingly true?
The mob is meek and the laws are mad. And the meeker the mob gets, the madder the laws become. And I have to correct...
Robbie, you're a very well-educated man. Who are you quoting?
This is G.K. Chesterton. Wrote it back in the 20s about the eugenics movement.
My God. I assume that you read about the fall of Rome at many times in your education, Robbie, didn't you?
I've read a lot. Yes, sir.
What people don't know is that when you look at ancient history and the fall of Rome, it was actually the end of civilization, of Western civilization. You're aware of that, I'm sure.
Yes, Michael.
And how did Rome fall? Allegedly, it was a result of vicious barbarian invasions during the 5th century, which destroyed the all-powerful Roman Empire and its centuries-old civilization, and then brought in a dark age for all the people of the West. All the people of the West. So who would the barbarians be today, using that analogy, Robbie? Who would the barbarians be who are out to destroy our civilization?
Well, there's people like Kissinger. There's people who hate humanity. They have a hole inside their soul that can only be fueled by the destruction of man. And the more they destroy it, the better they feel, because the void can never be filled, because they are depraved, and there is no rationality to the madness. And it's gone throughout history. This is nothing new. It's human nature. And the problem is we've become so drugged over that we seem to forget our instinct, and that is that it's the fight or flight, and we'll neither fight nor flight. We'll just stand here and just wait in line.
Well, people should know that Rome didn't disappear. It's just that all of the civilization surrounding Rome and the comforts of the civilization disappeared. And it was during the middle years of the 5th century that Italy slipped away into Germanic hands. In other words, the Germans occupied Italy at that time. That was the end of the Roman Empire. It didn't exactly disappear. It just became sort of run by Hell's Angels, in essence.
Well, look at the Colosseums in Rome. They were built to pacify the people, to keep their mind off with sports. Look at America today. Look at the news.
Mm-hmm. Let me read you a line from The Fall of Rome and the End of Civilization by Brian Ward Perkins. It was a book given to me by my good friend, Congressman John Culberson of Texas, when he came out to visit us with us and in March 24th, he went to an event with us, and he wrote to Michael Savage, a great American who will be decisive in saving America from following the Roman Empire. And I want to read you one paragraph, The Use and the Threat of Force. The Germanic invaders of the Western Empire seized or extorted through the threat of force the vast majority of the territories in which they settled without any formal agreement on how to share resources with their new Roman subjects. The key words here are seized or extorted. I believe we are being extorted daily, and that our so-called representatives are no longer our representatives. The only hope we have at this time is for it, and it has to be led by the Tea Parties. They must become more passive. They cannot permit the phony Republican Party to completely deball them. They must now become more Americans. During the election, when Gore tried to seize the presidency against Bush, do you remember those young men from Cuba with the white shirts in Florida who ran into the polling areas where the vermin with law degrees from NYU and Columbia had been bussed in to rig up the vote? Remember, they came in and started pounding on the glass, and it chased all of these little cowards back to New York? Well, that's what we need. We need young men and women in white shirts and ties pounding on the glass of the vermin on the left. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Boom and open, we'll meet again, boom. Ding dong, ding dong, a lang, a lang, a lang. Oh, 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 bip, a bip, a rope, a dip. Oh, life could be a dream. If only your
life was a dream in America. and then it all ended. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I want to just read you one more. I know it's Friday. You don't care. You're going to have a good party, whatever, tonight. You know, whatever you do is your business. I don't really care what people do. You know, you want drugs, sex, and rock and roll, and then you don't know why your life isn't working. That's your problem. It's not mine. And today is Good Friday, and you can laugh at all the Christians around the world who are remembering the day that their spiritual master, Jesus, was crucified, if you wish. Or you can laugh at that as pure fantasy, if you wish. It's a free country. You can do what you want. I happen to like religious people. I find them to be very inspirational, with the exception of one group of religious people who seem to think their religion encourages them to kill every other religion and convert them. But let's put that aside for the moment. What happened when Rome fell? I mean, what was life like? Because you say, well, Rome fell. What does it mean to you? There's one line I have to read to you from The Fall of Rome and the End of Civilization by Brian Ward Perkins. And they go, in other words, with the fall of the empire, art, philosophy, and decent drains all vanished from the West. Listen to what he wrote. After the empire fell, art collapsed, philosophy collapsed, and decent drains all vanished from the West. As you well know, art died in the United States of America circa, I would say, roughly 1950. There is no philosophy in the United States of America to speak of. There are ideas, but there are no schools of philosophy, so far as I know. That would be the equivalent of a school of philosophy of Aristotle or Plato. And then in terms of decent drains, take a look at the infrastructure of American cities. Coming back from any airport, especially here in the San Francisco area, you see highways where weeds are growing out of the pavement. You see potholes. I mean, I drive over the Golden Gate Bridge, and I marvel how an iconic structure such as this, which is such a powerful magnet for tourism, can have been permitted to fall into such disarray by the vermin who run this city and run the bridge is astounding to me. The roads are broken. There are potholes entering and coming off the bridge from San Francisco. And they rape and steal hundreds of millions of dollars a year from people with tolls, and no one knows where the Golden Gate Bridge tolls go. Why? Corruption. So again, we go back to this history. Why? History is a great instructor. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, are we repeating it? So again, I'll read that one line again to you. In other words, with the fall of the empire, art, philosophy, and decent drains all vanished from the West. As I said, there has been no art in America to speak of, no great art anyway, for at least 70 years. There's no philosophy that I can think of, maybe I'm wrong, and decent drains would refer to the infrastructure which vanished from the West. So in essence, the prognosis from Michael Savage is that we are witnessing not the coming death of a civilization, but the ongoing death of a civilization. Rome, you see, did not fall overnight. It took several hundred years for Rome to actually collapse completely. And this country is clearly in the throes of its death. These are the death throes of the United States of America. How else could you explain a president of this low caliber arriving in the White House? You remember I said to you that, what was it, the 1919 World Series were fixed by the gangster in New York. I forget his name. Does anyone remember? Arnold Rothstein fixed the 1919 World Series. You say, how could you fix the World Series? He did so. Well, this election was fixed, in my estimation. It was rigged to put in a stooge of those who are destroying America. And it's a combination of elements that found this ultimate man, Barack Hussein Obama. He had the right exact mix of elements to slip through the American mind. And here we are 2 years into this reign of terror, and he's now doing what he does best, which is attacking the middle class, calling them the rich. Make no mistake about it, he is surrounded by the very rich. He was put in power by the very rich. Many of these very rich continue to rape and pillage this economy and pay no income tax. And yet he continues to appeal to the morons at Facebook and the leftists in San Francisco by attacking the so-called rich.
Savage.
Many of you are asking for the name of the book I'm quoting. It's The Fall of Rome and the End of Civilization by Brian Ward Perkins. It was given to me by Congressman Culberson when we met in April, I believe, March 24th, 2011. Oxford University Press, Brian Ward Perkins. I don't know when it was published, 2005. And it's a different view of the fall of Rome than I have read before, because we previously thought that Rome just fell overnight, collapsed, really, but it really didn't. It was a slow collapse. But I want to read something that's very important, because everything we talk about on this show with regard to Obama and the communists and the barbarism that is underlying his political philosophy, because make no mistake about it, by attacking the essence of America, see, the essence of America is the middle class. Let me lay out the groundwork. Again, when I was a child, my mother would tell me, in Europe, there's fundamentally the rich and the poor. There was a very small middle class after World War II in Europe, which, of course, has grown to a large middle class now. But America, in the last century, particularly the early part of this century that we're in now, last century from the 50s on, had a monster middle class. And it defined America. There was a very small class of extremely wealthy people, and then there were the poor. But there was a vast middle class that was divided again within lower middle class, middle class, and upper middle class. But there was a middle class that defined America. Everything Obama does is attacking the middle class, not attacking the rich. Make no mistake about it. This is classic double talk, and it's a shuck and a jive. So here's a line that you have to hear. And this was written by a distinguished French scholar after World War II when he wrote this. Roman civilization did not pass peacefully away. It was assassinated. It's a chilling line. It was assassinated. See, America is being assassinated right now. It's being assassinated by the money changers in the temple, by the currency changers, by those who are pushing multiculturalism particularly. They are the assassins of Western civilization. Although they pose as progressives who will save us from our barbarism, they are in fact the barbarians. But they are so clever at their work that they have actually bamboozled the country into believing that they are the good and we are the evil. But to me, there are two different attitudes in life going on here. The civilization that we know and the barbarism that the Soviet-style left is bringing into the Western world right now, as evidenced by the cases that we present every day on the Savage Nation. The hordes of leftists are pillaging this country's social enterprises, our economy, etc. I guess it's too esoteric, so I don't want to go into it. It's not a, you know, not a class in the university here, and I don't need a blackboard and a pair of glasses and chalk to impress you with my education, because I have a great education. So I'll let it go with that, you know, because otherwise you'll start to think I'm posing as something that I'm not, when in fact I'm actually what I'm not posing to be. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Fred, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not so much attacking the middle class as ignoring it. I mean, look who he's got in charge of his policies, you know, Tim Geithner. Geithner's one of the wolves of Wall Street. He's not part of the solution. He's part of the problem, you know.
Well, I disagree with you. I would say that his attempt to raise taxes on people making $250,000 and more is a direct attack on the middle class. $250,000 is not rich. It's middle class. Two teachers who have been working for, teaching for 10 years are making $250,000 between themselves. Are they rich?
No, I agree with you there. I'm just saying, you know, like...
Or so, everything he does is an attack on the middle class. You know, make no mistake about it. And yet he gives a speech. Listen to clip one and listen to this, Fred. Clip one.
We can't ask everybody to sacrifice and then tell the wealthiest among us, well, you can just relax and go count your money and don't worry about it. We're not going to ask anything of you.
Okay. Well, how do you explain the 1,000 waivers for Obamacare that he's granted to his rich friends?
Oh, that's
how is that?
That's part of what I'm talking about. That's part of the problem. You know, he's given all these giveaways to the rich and stuff like truly rich.
Yes.
Don't need them. And the middle class is...
How do you explain Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric going to Brazil and South America with him, and then he comes back and we learn that GE paid no tax on $4.7 billion in U.S. profits? How is that possible? Where's Congress on investigating GE?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. The FBI should have been released on Wall Street a long time ago.
The FBI is instead worried about homophobia and Islamophobia. That's their two priorities right now. Okay, thanks for the call. That's all. That's what they're focused on. They got their magnifying glasses out looking for Islamophobia. Maine, Catherine, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I believe the actions of George Soros are evil and that he is, in fact, a serial killer of currencies.
It's another way to put it. He's a speculator who makes his living by betting for and against currencies, which is perfectly legal to do so, to do, by the way. However, there may be more than a fine line between speculating on currencies and manipulating currencies. You see, there's two very important questions. And if I were a U.S. senator, the first thing I would do would hold a Senate investigation on the manipulation of the U.S. currency. That's the very first task I would undertake, because if we don't stop these vultures from destroying our currency, we're finished. Can you imagine waking up one morning and finding out the U.S. dollar has no value? What are you going to do with the money that you put away in a bank? What's it going to be worth?
It's not going to be worth anything, sir. Along with the currencies, he's killing the hopes and the dreams, the families and the culture and the aspirations that are attached to the currency.
Okay, well, we don't have a Senate, though, that will take this up. So, what do we need to do about it? Well, for one, living well is the best revenge. Living well is the best revenge. So let me read you a theme, and then I'll tell you who wrote it. Illegal aliens are illegal. Domestic employment is indispensable. A stronger military is essential. Gun ownership is sacred. Government must be shrunk. The national budget must be balanced. Deficit spending must end. Bailout and stimulus plans are illegal. Income taxes must be lowered. Business income taxes must be lowered. Intrusive government's policies must be stopped. English only in all aspects of our country is required. Traditional family values must be supported. And yes, we are a Christian nation. Well, what do you think about that? Well, those are the core beliefs of one of the men who founded the Tea Party, Dale Robertson. That's a real Tea Party organizer, Dale Robertson, of what he called for. And what I published on page 25 of Trickle Up Poverty. But what has happened to Dale Robertson since? Where has he gone? Where is he? I don't know. Why is it that we don't hear much about the Tea Party anymore? They put an awful lot of people into power, and yet we have active Marxism operational right now. How is this possible? How could it be that active Marxism is now operational throughout the Republican Party on one level or another? Okay. New York City, WOR. Bill, you're the first up from New York City today. What's on your mind?
Yes, Michael. The Federal Reserve, when they loaned out all that money at 0.25% interest, a quarter of 1%, all of that went to the very wealthy, and those people don't pay.
Hold on. What do you mean when they loaned it out? You mean in what form? The stimulus money?
Yeah. The bailout. And the three $3 trillion loaned out to the banks, supposedly, and what?
Well, of course, the banks are the people who put Obama in power.
And what they've done is they've used that money to speculate offshore, so they don't have to pay taxes back in the United States. So it's just another way to implode the middle class, because they're the ones that want to implode it, to basically put in their power structure.
Well, I don't know. I honestly can't comment as to whether I agree with everything that you just said. It's very hard for me to follow it. I do agree with you that the bailout money was given to cronies. It's crony capitalism. It's corporate welfare. But there's a danger in talking like that for one reason. There are tens of thousands of people who have family corporations in this country who are not receiving any corporate welfare. They're producing a product or products. They're providing services. They're employing millions of people, and they're paying their taxes. So we have to be very careful to not join the bandwagon of the ignorant leftist who starts saying corporations are bad. You follow what I'm saying?
I'm not talking about those people.
I think we need to focus on corporations like General Electric, who own MSNBC, who are favorable to everything Obama does because he gives them tax breaks by looking the other way. They make $4.7 billion in U.S. Revenue, and they pay no taxes. Why is there no congressional outrage?
I have no answer for that, other than they're in the pockets because of all the lobby money sent to them.
Lobby this, lobby that. What does a lobbyist mean? A bribe. Lobby means bribe. A lobbyist is a man who gives and takes bribes. Okay? Bribes. Bribery. A lobbyist is a man who gives and takes bribes. Lobbyist. What does the word lobby mean? He stands in the lobby of a hotel and gives a bribe in a satchel. That's all, a bribe. Don't call them lobbyists. Call them bribe makers. That's all. So here it is. Timothy Geithner is out here with the president, who used 70-some-odd thousand gallons of gasoline to come and attack the rich in San Francisco. And he brought the boy from Queens, who apparently is losing his own house, Timothy Geithner. And apparently he was spotted this week in San Mateo County surfing with his kids. Apparently his daughter goes to one of the colleges here at Stanford, one of the worst colleges in the United States of America. The kids come out of there incapable of doing anything. Actually, the worst school in America to send your child to, in my estimation, is Harvard. And that's because the idiots come out thinking that they have an entitlement because, oh, I want the Harvard. I want the Harvard. And yet they're usually very incompetent because they have an entitlement attitude. I have found the most successful kids that I have ever known went to either city colleges or state colleges. They didn't go to college at all, frankly. I've never seen anyone who went to Harvard come out and do anything useful in the world. That doesn't mean there aren't some. I don't know of any. I don't know of any. I just don't know of anybody who's come out of Harvard and produced anything of any value. Please don't tell me about Facebook, because I personally don't think it's a very useful tool. I know, oh, how can you say that? I don't live with a device in my hand. Sacramento, Dan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, pleasure to talk to you. I think you're absolutely right. We have to react like this slow-boiling frog. We have to react right now to get us out of this dilemma we're in. I think that's why Trump is saying the things that he's saying. He's trying to get us to react, and there's no doubt we have to do that. I've been reading The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire by Gibbon recently, and we better...
Right, but Gibbon's view of the decline and fall is different than the view of the author that I was quoting today. That's why I quoted it. Gibbon had a different view, which was that it was rather sudden.
Well,
and this book is not about a sudden collapse of Rome. It's about a slow collapse of Rome and then an assassination of the civilization.
Yes, but either way, it's going to happen, huh?
It is happening. See, when I read to you earlier and said that after the collapse of Rome, art died. I'm trying to find it. I don't want to paraphrase something that was so perfectly written here. In other words, with the fall of the empire, art, philosophy, and decent drains all vanished from the West. Can you honestly say that you think that the art that we see in America is a mark of an advanced civilization or a collapsed civilization?
Of course, it's collapsing, but it's their version. I mean, when you see...
No. I mean, take a look at the movies being produced. Look at the people who make music and rub their crotches and, you know, do I have to do a mimic and a mime of what the music is in America today? Is that art?
Yeah, of course.
And how do you define philosophy? Who is the last philosopher you can quote in America as a true philosopher? Can you name anyone?
Well, that's the problem with the left. Their philosophy is anything goes. I mean, you know, we could talk...
No, but you see, here's the funny thing is we're playing their game. And we keep saying that we have to fight the left. And then we quote one of the leftists theorists. He wasn't a philosopher. Who was the most popular leftist theorist that we claim they're all using his playbook? It's Alinsky, right?
Yeah, it's either Alinsky or...
Okay, so Saul Alinsky was a theorist, not a philosopher. How would you define Michael Savage? I've written many, many books. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have read these books, and millions of people listen to me every week. Would you define me as a theorist or a philosopher?
I would say probably more philosopher.
Correct. I may be one of the only active philosophers in the United States of America today, and I'll tell you what, I challenge anyone listening to the show to prove me wrong. I would say that by my body of work and by the force of my ideas, I may be one of the most active philosophers in the United States of America today. Now, just because there's no course in the philosophy of Michael Savage at Harvard doesn't mean I don't exist. I do exist. I exist to millions of Americans who are all not dummies. And the fact of the matter is it's only a matter of who wins the battle for civilization as to who determines who the philosophers and the artists are. I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back. question is, what's the best way to do this? Is it to default? Is it to redistribute?
We have floor spending, but it's a matter of there's nothing wrong with taxing the top because it does not trickle down.
We do tax the top. Let's remember, most of our jobs come from successful small businesses. Two-thirds of our jobs.
There's Representative Paul Ryan in Wisconsin being booed at a town hall meeting by the communists and socialists, the bums, mainly teachers and unionists, who want to take more money from the middle class, booing him when he says that two-thirds of our jobs come from successful small businesses, and they start to boo him. And he says the businesses pay taxes individually, and when their tax rate is raised, he says it will hurt job creation, and the stooges in the audience put there by the illegitimate unions boo him. It's really astounding to see how active and criminal the unions have become under Obama. The unions, which have been beaten back because of their corruption and their thugism over the last 30 years, have suddenly come back like a disease, like Dracula, under Obama. There's no question about it that there's a connection between these two elements. North Carolina, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I had the privilege of working for the United States government in Kazakhstan, and I saw exactly what Obama's doing done there. The total demoralization of the middle class. Most Soviet middle class people had enough money in the bank to buy two cars. After Glasnost and Perestroika, they couldn't buy two chickens. And what happened was that all the state assets were given to the insiders and ferreted out. And if you look at the United States, all the assets are held in pension plans and 401ks. Obama is doing exactly what the Soviets did, exactly to a T. He's demoralizing the middle class.
Yes. You worked in Kazakhstan, you said?
Almaty. I helped put a stock exchange in there.
Wow. Oh, yeah. So you really know what you're talking about.
But I'll tell you exactly what he's doing. And you'll know, it just dawned on me. I remember going to the markets in Almaty, and a fresh chicken egg, cost 40 cents. This is 20 years ago. That's outrageous. And this is what this guy's going to do. He's going to take, he's going to demolish.
You mean, like, let's make it simple for the average listener on a Friday night. Gas is now $5 a gallon.
Exactly.
How does he get away with this? What would happen if a Republican came to power and gas went up 40% in 2 years? What would be going on? There'd be riots in the streets, wouldn't there? But because the radical illegitimate left, which was all run by the Democrat Socialist Party of the United States of America, they're silent. They're not burning McDonald's. They're not throwing cans over. They're not attacking police and police horses. It was all run by the Communist Party USA, and they put this man in power. I've seen this for years now. I know who he is. This is CPUSA all the way.
You know who made a couple billion dollars in the fall of the Soviet Union? George Soros. He had bought privatized shares and everything. And Goldman Sachs made a fortune in Russia, too. All these companies that are making money today made a fortune on the fall of the Soviet Union.
You're a man who knows it because you were there and you built a stock exchange, so you actually know what you're talking about as opposed to the people who don't really know what they're talking about. Jim, can I send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? I have only a few more left this week and next that the publisher has given me to give away. See if you agree with me on the chapter on the collusion of Wall Street in the election of the imposter Obama, a front man for worldwide Soviet communism, as sure as I'm sitting here. Another big hour across America on your local affiliate. In the interim, follow me on michaelsavage.com. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. God bless America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation.
Each time we have a quarrel, it almost breaks my heart. 'Cause I'm so afraid that we will have to part. Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love? One day I feel so happy.
And here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Hope and change? A national gloom descends over Obama's America. Anti-American Soros out to destroy the dollar. It's a frightening story that one man could control so much on the earth. And there it all is. You decide for yourself. Obama, you can't pee on our backs and call it rain. From yours truly. Box office power of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged baffles insiders. 1 year later, Arizona immigration fight still rages. It's in limbo. U.S. sends drones to Libya. We're now helping Al-Qaeda defeat Gaddafi. The devil you know or the devil you don't know. How GE, Google, and other mega corporations are paying no income tax. You heard me. Government cash handouts now top tax revenues. Egypt's new government courts Iran. Thank you, CNN. Fake veteran found guilty of $16 million scam. The War of the Egghead Academics. You better read that one again. Big bomb found near Indonesia church. Did you know that bands of Muslim militants are hoping to turn the secular nation of 237 million into an Islamic state? They've now shifted their focus to local enemies, meaning Christians. Of course, the AP calls them militants. See, anything but Muslims. Anything but Muslim. Militants, terrorists. Big bomb found near Indonesia church, 19 arrested. That's right. Believed Islamic militants have been plotting an attack ahead of Easter celebrations. And the U.S. Embassy urged nothing, probably capitulation. You see, Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim nation. Now, of course, the nation itself has been battling Muslim extremists since 2002. They haven't really won. In recent months, small bands of Muslim militants are hoping to turn the secular nation of 237 million into an Islamic state. So now they're attacking police, members of a minority Islamic sect deemed deviant, Christians, and moderate Muslim leaders. Can you believe this? Ugh. Sickening. The world at war. A city in Northern California wants crosses removed from headstones at a military cemetery. Here's a hot one from England. A man was arrested in front of his family for an anti-gypsy email he didn't even write. That's right. You heard it. Obama's Secretcology is revealed, Chapter 2 of Trickle Up Poverty. And don't forget, take a look at Savage's first thriller, Abuse of Power, coming soon. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Let's go to see what else is in the news. Well, today is Good Friday. The communist left has celebrated Earth Day today. Is it coincidence? No, I doubt it. Remember, the left wing is actively trying to replace our Judeo-Christian tradition with pagan earth worship and environmentalism, their religion. Comic fined for insulting lesbian during a show. In the land of what country? Indonesia? Huh? We'll soon find out. Comedian fined for insulting a lesbian during a show. Canada. A Canadian comic has been ordered to pay $15,000, U.S. $15,745, to a woman he taunted along with her same-sex partner during a show in Vancouver 3 years ago. Stand-up comedian Guy Earl was ordered to pay the money to Lorna Party, while the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal also ordered the Vancouver restaurant owner Salam Ismail to pay her $7,500. This is unbelievable. The comedian said he will appeal the ruling and that all he did was insult audience members who insulted him first. He argued that the lesbian threw a drink in his face first. He then said the tribunal had no jurisdiction to hear the case. Tribunal member Murray Geiger Adams said Earl repeated vulgar language in public and attacked Party's identity and dignity as a woman and a lesbian. That's the world we're living in now? That's what the man died for? So these scum-sucking human rights pigs can do this to us? Yes, that's right. So these scum-sucking human rights pigs could do this to us. That's the sad and depressing news today. And finally, one last note. Are we losing in Libya? Well, what do you expect from an egghead academic? My dog is locked out of the studio and he's barking and it's disturbing me. I went in and out of my studio so many times tonight before I started, I forgot I locked Teddy out. So I have to put up with him barking. It's giving me like a double agita. A double agita because I want to be on the air and I want to let the dog in. And I'll tell you truthfully, I think the dog is more important than being on the microphone. Teddy, hold on a minute. I'm on the air. When I went to college, which was quite a while ago, we were required to read certain books. I think it was the University of Chicago, 100 Great Books. And one of them was Thorsten Veblen's Conspicuous Consumption. Either it was an essay or a book. But we were raised to understand that conspicuous consumption was vulgar and garish. Now, really, in a way, looking back, it's kind of communistic because it's very un-American to teach you not to buy things. I realize that. But I was definitely imprinted with that. I mean, certain things I like, and I don't buy them. I don't think I buy them to be conspicuous. I buy them because they're great and they run well. Like, did I buy my car to be conspicuous with the car? No, I bought it because it's the best car in the world, for example. Okay, that's an example. I think that's the reason. I mean, there are good cars, but they don't run well, generally. They don't give me a sense of, let us say, security or control that I would get out of a better machine. I like really good machines. Same with boat. I could have gotten a smaller, lesser boat, but they're not as good. I don't want something that might break down or I have no control over. You see what I mean? It's like with a gun. Same with a gun. I mean, there's lesser guns than the kind of guns that I own, all right? We get into the guns now, the gun nuts will call. But the truth is, I don't want a gun that's going to explode in my hand. So you could say conspicuous consumption, buy a cheap gun. No, I don't want a Saturday Night Special that blows up in my hand. I want the best machine gun in the world, right? And there are quite a few. Now, I'm not going to do guns right now because I know you're going to call. Man engulfed in flames at San Francisco pawn shop. Here, this is a... These are the kind of values Nancy Pelosi talks about when she talks about San Francisco values. A man was hospitalized this evening with life-threatening third-degree burns after somehow catching fire inside a San Francisco pawn store. The fire occurred at the Golden Gate Adult Superstore. You hear Adult Superstore. How about Degenerate Superstore? On 6th Street near the intersection of Mission. It's a slum of the worst order. Police officers across the street from the pawn shop saw a man run out the front door of the store engulfed in flames. SFPD Lieutenant Troy Dangerfield said. Wasn't there a comedian named Rodney Dangerfield? Yeah, not related. How do you catch fire in a porn store? I don't understand. I mean, you could start with the jokes, you know, friction and all that, but come on. That doesn't make sense. The man whose name has not been released as it was being treated at St. Francis Memorial Hospital for severe burns over 90% of his body. That's not funny, but how does a guy catch fire in a porn store? The man had apparently been watching videos in a private booth at the adult arcade, meaning the degenerates arcade, when the fire ignited. So now you go to the bloggers. Bloggers are smart, some of them. Some are idiots, but here's someone wrote, that must have been some hot porn. Okay, stupid, but funny. Okay. Let's see this one. Amyl nitrate poppers is an inhalant that is used to intensify and prolong male climax and extremely flammable. You see, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That is very interesting. Okay, that's a mystery now. That is a mystery. Someone that wrote this, maybe God was simply saying naughty, naughty, doubt it. Then someone wrote, what was God doing in a San Francisco porn store? Oh, God. You know that a lot of the blog items on, it's like graffiti. Has anyone noticed that? Am I the first one to note that? You can steal it if you'd like and put it on someone's show tomorrow. But if you look at blog comments on some odd stories or even intelligence stories, some of them are pretty amazing. But they remind me of graffiti on bathhouse walls. It was a case of premature conflagration. No, I can't read that. I don't know. Some of it's idiotic. But do you think that... It was, let's not go into it. Let's not waste God's time on that. Man engulfed in flames at San Francisco pawn shop. Let's leave it at that. How could he catch fire? We don't know. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. play a little Irish music for me to dance, the river dance music, before I go to my next opinion on something. The river dance, the river dance, the river dance, the river dance. The river, Rivington Street. Rivington Street, river dance. Sinuses today. Little high step in there down by the river so the king could select his date for the night. That's how it started. Oh, now it's all polished up, you know. The origin of the river dance is pretty clear to me. All right, bring them all down, and we'll throw with the mutton about 10 o'clock. Bring in 1,000 of them. I want to see them dance by the shore. Like, think about it. It's like Charlie Sheen, the king, the ancient princes and kings, the murderers, right? Right, bring me 1,000 of them down here. But they have a mind. I don't want to hear about their age. Their dad causes any trouble. Put them in irons. So, gluten-free and a coffee. Look at this. I'm starving. I need gliadin. I'm going to die. I need it so badly. I gotta go get my gluten right after the show. I feel like I'm going to starve to death if I don't have gluten. I need my gluten fix. I am going to go have spaghetti tonight. I got news for you. I need that spaghetti and marinara sauce, gluten. And then I want a beer on top. I like a high gluten dinner because it makes me so groggy I fall asleep. Why do you want to be alert for in the middle of the night? Don't you want to get knocked out? Isn't that the object of eating a big dinner, to go to sleep? I don't understand what people are. They don't figure it out. The reason people eat a lot of bread or spaghetti at night is to get tired. Where is it written you're supposed to be up 24 hours a day working and doing things? And I mean, what are you doing anyway in the middle of the night? There's nothing to do in the middle of the night. I get up early like a child again. I don't know what to do with myself. 5:30, I wake up, it's dark. I'm not going to go run. We got to be a lunatic to start running at 5:30. When I'm in Florida, I see people on the beach at 6 in the morning. I don't understand what's wrong with them. I know I don't have a house in South Carolina near the Marine base. These can't be normal people running at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm joking. If you want to stay healthy that way, I admire you for it. I'm just not going to do it. I usually get up. I look at the dog. I take him down. I let him go out. I lock the door. I go back to sleep. I have phenomenal ideas. You know that Mark Twain? I don't know who. One of my literary heroes when I was a young man said that he got his best ideas at dawn. A lot of them did. You're not supposed to jump up and start exercising. You lie quietly in the room and you let your mind, when it's calm, start to think quietly early in the morning. There's no garbage trucks. There's no nothing, if you're lucky. And your mind will produce amazing thoughts early in the morning, before you get up. Try that for exercise. Exercise your mind without medication. Instead of rushing for a vitamin or this or that, see what your mind comes up. But don't be afraid to think. I'm afraid to tell you this. Americans are afraid to think. They're terrified to use their minds. And particularly the younger people, they've been brainwashed into groupthink by our school systems and by the conformity and the conformist mentality of their peers. They're afraid to think for themselves. And they're also afraid of what their mind's going to say. It's like an enemy to them. It's like a foreign body, their brain. And they do anything to block it out. They go to a restaurant, you can't eat. Screaming and yelling, put a glass of wine in them. And a yelling, screaming. Who could eat around that? Everything can't be that funny. You ever people in a restaurant, like someone says something, there's an extraordinary, like, woman laugh, like a screech. How could it be that funny? Because they're paying for 2 glasses of wine at $9 a piece. That's funny unto itself, so she better laugh. So when she goes home, she could say she had a good time. But all right, what I'm saying is, let your mind work early in the morning. You can't believe what your mind could come up with. Like this morning, just give you an example. Then I'll go on with the news, I swear to you. I was thinking about my novel early in the morning. There's some scenes that are bothering me. There's one scene on a tiny island in the book that takes place in San Francisco Bay that is an uninhabited island that is occupied by cormorants and gulls and pelicans. It's a small spit of a piece of a rock that juts out in the bay that I've seen 100 times as I goes by my boat. But it plays a kind of important role at some point in my novel. I'm not going to tell you, right? So I wrote it a certain way where I said the island was occupied by cormorants and gulls, and the pelicans had taken over the grassy side of the island, right? So it was bothering me. And I said, this is like a huge painting. And this little island is no bigger than the size of a pinky nail in this monster painting. But the detail on this pinky nail in my novel has to be perfect. So this is what's plaguing me now, is how to paint that island. So I go back and I rewrite it like this. I change the lines. If I can remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me. I write, the island is uninhabited except for cormorants, gulls, and some other bay birds, with the exception of the grassy side of the island, which was dominated by the pelicans, period, by two nesting pelicans, period. Amongst animals as amongst humans, or I said as in humans, the strongest have the best real estate. Now, I thought that was a beautiful line. Now, you may say, big deal. What's the big deal? Well, if you, everything is a big deal because you didn't do it. And when something is good, as a writer, I got to tell you something. You know it's perfect when you think you read it somewhere and you didn't. Or you say, that's so obvious. Why is it so well done? Because it's perfect. It's called a perfect line. I wrote a perfect line. The point I'm making is I was proud of myself because it came to me at 5:30 in the morning when instead of getting up and starting with the day with the computer, I laid there in the dark. After taking the dog out, my mind started to think about that scene. So I thought it was a perfect line. So you can do it too. This is a rough day for me. It's like swimming in glue. I'll tell you why. I don't know why. The news is depressing. The president's depressing. The climate's depressing. The allergies are depressing.
Savage.
Mackenzie Eaglen is a columnist and contributor to the Heritage Foundation. She's on the Savage Nation to speak about Obama's military budget that's going to leave us exposed to the next attack. Mackenzie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here.
What major programs has Obama cut from the military?
Well, this president has instituted a series of rolling defense cuts that have gone largely unnoticed till now, and that is because he's making a political decision to dramatically cut military spending as a bill payer for domestic programs under the ruse of deficit reduction. And what we're seeing at risk are core defense capabilities that this nation has come to rely upon and that we oftentimes take for granted, everything from space superiority that, you know, allows our troops to move with impunity in the battle space, to, you know, protecting the sea lanes and the sea lines of communication that allow us to go to the store every day and buy what we need and log on to the internet.
Well, do these cuts really affect our national defense?
What's happening is that there is a slow bleed in the defense budget, and it's actually impacting not only our ability to fight and win in Afghanistan in particular, but it's also affecting the military's ability to prevail in all of the other areas upon which the nation is asking them and sending them. So, for example, this president has surged in Afghanistan while also asking the military to provide, you know, significant humanitarian assistance and disaster relief to our allies in Japan and undertake a no-fly zone, no-drive zone in Libya, among many, many, many other missions. These are only a handful, but they are the most public. And all of these are at risk because the capabilities required to execute all of these, everything from helicopters to ships to planes, we don't have enough of them now. We're having to trade off what we're sending to different places. And so what it's putting the military in the position to do is not do everything well.
Terrorism hasn't gone away. The U.S. is involved in three wars. I don't think we can expect our military to fight all these threats to our security with a reduced budget.
We can't. That's really the bottom line. And we're kidding ourselves if we think that we can just continue to ask the military to do more with less. Because, that, like I said, this has been underway for several years. And, you know, we've been turning the screws on those in uniform and taking away select capabilities while, you know, building up in some areas like drones, for example, that are in high demand in Afghanistan and Iraq. But it's now starting to cut past the muscle. It's into bone. And what you're seeing is that the military is actually now starting to feel the effects of this. And what it could really turn into is something similar to what we saw after Vietnam in the 1970s, which is what we call a hollow force, where you have reduced readiness levels, so you have a military unprepared to respond to the next problem or the next crisis, which affects all of our security, or you also have reduced readiness across the board for those in uniform, and that impacts morale. You know, we're already, you know, the military is undertaking the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal right now, in addition to doing all the other things we're asking them to do. If we pile one more thing on there where they're not being given all the resources they need and all the training that they need and the education that they need, then things can fall apart. We've put an all-volunteer force in conflict for a decade. We've never done this before in the history of the country. All of these changes at once and reductions could really break the force. And that's something that I'm very concerned about.
It looks to me like Obama's sacrificing our national security to push his own domestic welfare agenda.
The president's been using the military as a bill payer for all of his domestic programs for the last 2 years, and it's quite unfortunate. You know, during the stimulus and the bailout spending bills, you know, combined over $1 trillion, there wasn't one penny spent on modernizing the military's equipment or, you know, things that they need right now. And, you know, you would think that the military's been, you know, the culprit of rising budgets and deficits, and when in fact that's not the case. Defense spending is 19% of the federal budget. Defense spending has been on the decline and is set to decline much further, while entitlement programs have seen exponential growth in the last several years. Deficit spending, and oh my goodness, you know, that has been bailouts and stimulus. And, you know, the way the president talks, it's as if defense was the driver and the cause, and yet, you know, it's being asked to contribute more and more to deficit reduction, yet no other federal agency is under that same level of scrutiny. And what makes that so egregious, not just the potential risk it poses on those in uniform as well as you and I, but all spending is not equal, by Uncle Sam. Our national security is the first duty of government. You know, education spending is important, but none of the other spending that we have, for example, is going to matter if our security is at risk, if we have another 9/11, or if we have to get involved into another very expensive war. We will have defeated the purpose of cutting defense. We won't have saved a dime.
Since the nation is clearly going through a debt crisis, what should we cut from the military budget?
Funding the right budget for the federal government is paying for what you're supposed to be doing and not paying for what you're not supposed to be doing. Providing for the national security of the United States and all of the Americans here and abroad is what the government is supposed to be doing. So I don't take it as a foregone conclusion that defense has to be cut. Now, does defense need to be under a microscope, performing audits cleanly, doing its due diligence and forensic accounting into every line item? Absolutely. Every program needs to be justified on its merit. If we don't need it, get rid of it. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the way you properly fund a defense budget is you say, well, what are the nation's interests? What's required to defend and protect those? What capabilities do you need? And here's what it costs. And unfortunately, with the speech last week by President Obama, what we saw was a purely partisan and political decision, picking a number out of the air and trying to jam a military strategy underneath it. And, you know, that's a tail wagging the dog approach. And it's going to hurt those in uniform. And by extension, it does affect our security. There are absolutely areas in defense spending where you can make changes and adjustments, scale back, even reprioritize into other areas of investment. And that's the kind of thing, you know, I've looked at here at Heritage. And that needs to, you know, continue on overdrive, you know, because national security and economic security are fundamentally linked. They both support and strengthen the other. But the bottom line is, if you're a family and you have a fixed income and you're a distressed borrower, you don't stop paying your mortgage to meet all your bills. So you don't give up your security in the name of deficit reduction. We've got to learn to do both.
Well, shouldn't Obama be making the acquisitions process more efficient?
Everything that the Department of Defense does, it needs to be more efficient. It is a huge bureaucracy because it needs to be. You know, the military has over 2 million people on its books, and that's a large bureaucracy. And anything that large is destined to be somewhat inefficient, and particularly in certain areas. You know, there's often a misnomer or a misunderstanding that, you know, equipment and weapon systems is the bulk of the defense budget. But in fact, just like any large organization, people are the Department of Defense's most expensive weapons system. And so, you know, buying the equipment that our troops fly and sail and drive in is 1/7 of the entire defense budget. So, you know, you can only do so much in that account. You know, the entire defense budget needs to be under scrutiny.
China recently tested its stealth fighter for a second time. Do you think this country is prepared for a rising threat from the Chinese?
You know, out of this administration, and particularly this serving Secretary of Defense, it's been virtual silence on China. You know, they don't just have a new stealth, possibly fifth-generation fighter. We don't know enough about it yet. You know, they have a carrier killer missile that can put our entire U.S. Navy at risk and hold us out further than we may need to be to defend our ally Taiwan or be there for our friends in Japan or even Korea in the Korean Peninsula. I mean, the capabilities that they are rapidly acquiring and why they are acquiring them are, you know, that's also a problem because we don't have visibility into that. You know, it's a challenge for the Navy and the Navy and the Air Force and all of the services. And what we've seen is, you know, a secretary who does not spend time talking, at least publicly, about the rising challenges potentially posed by China's military modernization investments. You know, the military has to be able to do its job successfully in Afghanistan, wind down Iraq, prevail in Libya. It also needs to be given all of the tools to prevail in the next Afghanistan or the next Libya or the next Iraq. I'm not saying that's China, but it doesn't matter where it is. They still need all of those tools. And what we're seeing is too much focus on the present and not enough also on the future.
Mackenzie Eaglin, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
I'll be right back. Savage. Savage back here. Had a gluten-free breakfast bar for lunch today. I wonder what this gluten mania is. I mean, I have a doctorate in nutrition. I like gluten. Everyone's obsessed with gluten-free. They think they found, like, the holy grail. It's a protein that is in wheat and related species, including barley and rye. It keeps dough elastic. It helps dough keep its shape, and it gives the final product a little chewy texture. Now, there are some known gluten sensitivity cases. Very few, but it's an obsession right now. Now everyone's gluten. They go to some quack, and he discovers you are allergic to gluten. And they don't eat gluten. They think that they've solved the world's problems. And they find out that they're allergic to gliadin. And now this is the reason that they've had an inferiority complex all their life, why they're small, why they're fat, why they're tall, why their wife left them, why their mother hated them, why their grandmother beat them. It was all because of gluten and spaghetti. it's in America. Everybody jumps on these fads, and they think that they found the holy grail for every problem in their life. It's unbelievable to me. Sure, there are some people with sensitivities to gluten, but now everybody is gluten-free this, gluten-free that. So I'm in a new studio. Someone left a box of gluten-free breakfast bars. I had one for lunch. I never felt better. Maybe I'm allergic to gliadin. For me, it could be all those problems caused by gluten. What do I know? But because I'm a doubting Thomas, it's like Y2K. Everything to me is a Y2K fad. You know what I'm saying? It's true I had coffee before the show, which is a killer because now I can't drink after the show. That's the killer. If I have coffee during a show or before it, this late in the day, then I can't have alcohol. It's a smasheroo. But I'm suffering for your sins, you know, you, my audience. You got to understand, for me to have a gluten-free bar in lieu of a hot lunch, let me back up. I remember now, before that I ate some sushi that was left over in the refrigerator from yesterday. It's the pre-Fukushima sushi that I bought. It was like the last batch that I was sure didn't come from Japan. So I ate it. Like, I loved it. It was a little hard, the rice, but it was pre-Fukushima sushi I had. Then I had the gluten-free bar. I got like a hunger jag, and it was too late to get lunch. I have a question. Why are the Irish such great fighters and warriors? I saw a great show in the history of the Irish last night on one of the channels, History Channels, and I didn't know that there was a great wave of Irish immigrants to America prior to the potato famine, and a good portion of the Continental Army was comprised of Irish who became phenomenal patriots and fought the British because of what the British had done to them in Ireland. It's an amazing story when you think about it. Did you know Andrew Jackson was Irish? I didn't know any of this. This is an amazing story, you know. The few Irish friends I have are from the bars. That's about it. Actually, the only friends I have in the world are from restaurants and bars. It comes down to it. The end of the day. I mean, where you go to eat and drink is really all that matters. What else really matters, right? Very nice. Living well is the best revenge. You know what that means, right? Well, whatever it means, you know what, you can figure it out pretty easily. Erin Gobra is not a reference to lingerie, by the way, since we're talking Irish things. Éireann go bra is the anglicization of a Gaelic phrase and is used to express allegiance to Ireland. It is most often translated as Ireland forever. So if you say Éireann go bra on a subway car, you could probably get arrested for some type of verbal molestation. They could assume that you're saying something to a lady on the subway, and before you know it, you'll be pummeled to death. Did you see the fight on a New York subway over a spaghetti? Someone was eating spaghetti on a subway. Oh, my God. My God, what a country. Thank God I left. I mean, I used to ride the subway when I was a young social worker, then a young teacher. It was horrendous then. It's a nightmare now. I can't believe it. Eating on a subway. What's next? They're going to give birth on the subway car and leave the baby there on the way to a dance? I've never seen anything. Ugh, slurping spaghetti out of a container on a packed subway car? Why don't they just do their laundry? They can bring, like, laundry along next time. Well, what's next on a subway car? It's unbelievable what New York and everywhere, whatever. Look, the world is not what it was. Is it ever going to be what it was? Was it ever what it was? Is it ever what it was? Everyone says it never what it was. It was. It wasn't so great when I was young either. It was better when the guys before me said what it was, and before them they said it was better. Before them they said it was better. By the way, the Irish first settled in Brooklyn in the worst neighborhood in town called Gravesend. And if you look carefully, Gravesend, Brooklyn, is where there's a graveyard where old Dutch pioneers were buried from the 1600s. I had a nightmare about it after watching the show. Now, I don't like to watch anything with graves in it. The thought about it. But the thing is, Gravesend stuck in my head because I never really put the two together. You hear Gravesend. Do you think graves? No. But moreover, you have the Irish coming into the poorest neighborhood, the first slums in New York were in Gravesend. And what was there? Graves. If you live for yourself, as you've been taught to do in America, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? What you wind up with is a narcissist in the White House who lives for himself and pretends that he lives for the country when he doesn't. Except when it rolls around election time, he suddenly puts on the mantle of sanctimony, and there we go again. So what am I saying? We should be collectivists? Am I arguing we should become socialists, communists, and live for the nation? I didn't say that. Is there not a balance point where you could live for yourself and live for the community and the country? Is there not such a balance point where you can enjoy your life to a certain extent and give something to the country? And worry about the country, and worry about the currency, and worry about the enemy within, and worry about the incompetence and the outright traitors who walk through the halls of Congress, whispering their tales of deceit in the parlance of America. Is there no such person like me? You mean I'm the only person in America who thinks this way? It can't be. I can't be alone. I cannot be alone. I cannot be the only person who thinks this way. No matter how I may be debased, no matter how the vermin in the media may debase me or ignore me or try to make me into what I am not, although the entire government of England was in cahoots with the United States of America and made me out to be a certifiably bad guy, a villain, and put me in a list of murderers and terrorists, and virtually nobody came to my aid. Nobody. I'm still twisting in the wind. I will not yet give up on my country, and I will not give up on freedom, and I will not give up on the tenets of our civilization. I will not do so. I just won't do so. 1-800-449-8255. Would you please do me a favor? Don't buy it. Would you go to Amazon.com and look at Abuse of Power? The book's not out till September, so I shouldn't have done this. I know I wasn't supposed to. But I'm so thrilled with this thriller that I had to put it up there. From the New York Times bestselling author and controversial radio talk. Why am I controversial? What do you mean controversial? Al Sharpton's not controversial, but I am. Louis Farrakhan, they talk about the Reverend Farrakhan. They don't call him a controversial whatever minister. I'm controversial. That's like putting a stigma on me. Comes a high-intensity debut thriller. Now I'm a debutante. The story of a disgraced network journalist who uncovers a chilling terrorist plot. My hero is Jack Hatfield as a hard... Shall I read this to you? Yes. Jack Hatfield is a hardened former war correspondent. See, it's fiction. I was not a war correspondent. Who rose to national prominence for his insightful, provocative commentary. But after being smeared as a bigot and extremist by a radical media watchdog group, now let me put it in a parenthesis, loosely based upon someone you may know whose name begins in S and ends in S, he ultimately loses his job and finds himself working in obscurity as a freelance news producer in San Francisco. Hatfield is on a ride along with the SFPD bomb squad when a seemingly routine carjacking turns deadly. after police find several pounds of military-grade explosives in the Jack car. And when the FBI urges Hatfield to stay out of it, he knows he's onto something big. This event will open up a shadowy trail that leads Hatfield to Tel Aviv, London, Paris, and back again to the United States, where he works with a beautiful and seductive Yemeni intelligence agent and a veteran Green Beret to expose a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah and a plot within the highest corridors of power that will make 9/11 look like child's play. In this lightning-paced first thriller by Michael Savage spanning the globe from Europe and Israel to the back alleys of San Francisco's Chinatown, a reporter must make the choice between protecting his own life and investigating a terrorist cell whose goal is nothing less than total political control, no matter what the cost. I can't wait to see the movie version. I cannot wait to see my dog Teddy playing Eddie.
Savage.